Hi, this is Ivan Kushamard. I'm a chiropractic associate at Bergman Family Chiropractic in Huntington Beach, California, and I'm going to be talking about how to obtain a medical exemption to vaccinations. So why would I want an exemption for my child? Well, here's a good quote from Barbara Lowe Fisher, president of the National Vaccine Information Center. It says, "While the state may have the legal authority to mandate use of vaccines, nobody has the moral authority to force you to get vaccinated or vaccinate your child without your voluntary, informed consent." Let me talk a little bit about our rights here. So this comes from the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness." The First Amendment of the Constitution states that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Well, in California, they have done just that, which with taking away the religious exemptions, and maybe some other states as well. Amendment 14, Section 1 guarantees that no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. Okay, so that's exactly what they've done. The states are denying the privilege of public education based on bad science and industry propaganda. Those who stand to make billions of dollars are counting on the public to buy into their fear-mongering and lies, or simply go with the status quo and not take the time and energy needed to educate themselves. Getting an exemption to vaccines takes time, energy, money, and the will to stand up for what you know is right for your child in the face of big money and an overwhelmingly loud majority. So who makes the guidelines and recommendations that go into these laws? Well, people like Dr. Julie Gerberding. From 2002 to 2009, she was director of the CDC. And from 2009 to the present, she's now president of Merck's vaccine division. Merck's a $5 billion a year operation and the supplier of the largest number of vaccines the CDC recommends. Gee, any conflict of interest there? Here's a quote that kind of sums it up here. This is by Hermann Göring of the SS. "But after all, it is the leaders of a country who determine the policy. All you have to do is tell them, the public, they're being attacked, and denounce the peacemakers for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in any country." Okay, I'm going to read a few quotes from some MDs and PhDs, important people in this subject. Okay, so the first one's by Dr. Gerhard Buchwald, MD. "To create fear among parents to strengthen their motivation to vaccinate is an important part of the publicity used to promote vaccination. A whole branch of research is examining the question, what level of fear needs to be created to appear as convincing as possible?" Here's one by Dr. David Ayub, MD. "I'm no longer trying to dig up evidence to prove vaccines cause autism. There is already abundant evidence. This debate is not scientific, but it is political." Here's one by Dr. Bernard Rimland, PhD, director of the Autism Research Institute and founder of the Autism Society of America. He says, "The vaccine autism evidence is now overwhelming. Despite the misinformation from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the Institute of Medicine." Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about informed consent. Here's a little bit of precedence about that. This is Schoendorf versus the Society of New York Hospital. This is back in 1914. In this case established that the patient was an active participant in the treatment decision process. So the judge, Justice Benjamin Cardozo, summarizes, "Every human being of adult years in sound mind has a right to determine what shall be done with his own body, and the surgeon who performs an operation without his patient's consent commits a battery for which he is liable in damages." Another one, Rishworth versus Moss, back in 1916. "A physician is liable for operating upon a person unless he obtains the consent of such a person, if competent to give consent, and if not, of someone who, under the circumstances, would be legally authorized to give the consent. That in the case of a child of tender years, consent must be obtained from the parent or guardian. All right, so what exactly is informed consent? Well, according to the NIH, and this is the Medline Plus, their website here, U.S. National Library of Medicine, informed consent means that you're informed, you've received information about your health condition and treatment options. Okay, you understand your health condition and treatment options, and you're able to decide what health care treatment you want to receive and give your consent to receive it. When asking for your informed consent, your doctor or other healthcare provider must explain if the treatment is necessary now or if it can wait. Well, the hepatitis B shot on the first day of life, I don't know if that's necessary now. I mean, unless your baby is a sexually promiscuous IV drug user, probably not. Your health problem and the reason for the treatment, well, if you don't have a problem, I'm not sure you really need. I guess they're talking about preventative medicine, but yeah, it doesn't work. What happens during the treatment, the risks of the treatment, how likely they are to occur. Well, they might tell you a few of the risks, but they're not basing it on good science, and how likely they are to occur probably don't tell you either. How likely the treatment is to work, well, again, according to bad science, it works, but real science, it doesn't work so well. Other options for treating your health problem, they do not give. We're talking, how about having a healthy immune system and healthy nervous system, or maybe even homeoprophylaxis, the homeopathy alternative that's been shown to work, similar to vaccines, but completely safe. And, okay, unknown risks or possible side effects that may happen later on. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they downplay all that stuff. So it seems more like coerced consent than informed consent. Okay, so they keep going with this. You have the right to refuse treatment. Okay, and, yeah, that's good enough. All right, so let's talk a little bit about medical research ethics. So I'm talking about the Nuremberg Code. This is the most important medical research ethics document. It's formulated in August of 1947 in Nuremberg, Germany. This is where American judges were sitting in judgment of Nazi doctors accused of conducting murderous and torturous human experiments in the concentration camps. There are 10 key points, and they have to do with informed consent, absence of coercion, proper formulation of experiments, and beneficence towards the participants. Well, what they're doing to our kids is an experiment. So here's a study, the relative trends in hospitalizations and mortality among infants by the number of vaccine doses and age based on the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, or VAERS, 1990 to 2010. This is their conclusion. Studies have not been conducted to determine the safety or efficacy of administering multiple vaccines in a variety of combinations as recommended by the CDC guidelines. Quote, our findings show a positive correlation between the number of vaccine doses administered and the percentage of hospitalizations and deaths. Since vaccines are given to millions of infants annually, it is imperative that health authorities have scientific data from synergistic toxicity studies on all combinations of vaccines that infants might receive. They also come to the conclusion that the percentage of hospitalizations and death also increases the younger the infants were when they received the vaccine. This was out of the Journal of Human Experimental Toxicology in 2012. So let's talk about that VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. So this came through in the 1986 Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. It's run by the CDC and FDA. So this is what it is. Under federal law, doctors and all vaccine providers in the U.S. are required to provide written vaccine benefit and risk information before vaccination takes place. Well, that depends on which studies you're looking at. Are you looking at industry studies and they're given numbers that are not reflective of the truth? Or are they really actually giving you good science? I doubt they're giving you good science. I know they're not. And then they got to keep a permanent record of the vaccines, record symptoms of serious health problems in the medical record, and make a report to the Federal Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, VAERS, of serious health problems, hospitalizations, injuries, and deaths that occur following vaccinations. And if the doctor refuses to make a VAERS report, the family can report directly. Well, according to the American Journal of Public Health 95 and the John Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, it's estimated that only between 1 to 10% of all vaccine adverse events are reported to VAERS. 1 to 10%. So this is an experiment, folks. Here's a quote from Dr. Alan Cantwell, MD. Using kids as guinea pigs is potentially harmful vaccine experiments is every parent's worst nightmare. This actually happened in 89 to 91 when Kaiser Permanente of Southern California and the CDC jointly conducted a measles vaccine experiment without proper parental disclosure. The Yugoslavian-made high titer Edmonston Zagreb measles vaccine was tested on 1,500 poor, primarily black and Latino inner-city children in L.A. Highly recommended by the World Health Organization, the high-potency experimental vaccine was previously injected into infants in Mexico, Haiti, and Africa. It was discontinued in these countries when it was discovered that the children were dying in large numbers. Yet they did that in America, in California, on our kids without telling us. Here's another one. J. Anthony Morris, former chief vaccine control officer of the U.S. FDA. There is no evidence that any influenza vaccine thus far developed is effective in preventing or mitigating any attack of influenza. The producers of these vaccines know that they are worthless, but they go on selling them anyway. That was the chief vaccine control officer of the FDA. Here's another one. Dr. Mark Geyer, MD, PhD. No long-term safety testing for the influenza vaccine has ever been done. They are experimenting on our lives and our children. Influenza vaccine is an experimental vaccine. Okay, so going back to that National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, where they instituted the VAERS system, this was back in 86. This is how we're losing even more of our rights here. So Section 22B, Part 1 of the Act provides, no vaccine manufacturer shall be liable in a civil action for damages arising from a vaccine-related injury or death associated with the administration of a vaccine after October 1st, 88. If the injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable even though the vaccine was properly prepared and was accompanied by proper directions and warnings. Because I'm sure they really emphasize those warnings when they tell the parents about these, huh? This takes liability away from the vaccine manufacturer. Since its start in 1990, the NCVIP has paid out over $3.73 billion in damages. Even though around two-thirds of the cases were thrown out, and only 1 to 10% are actually reported. So how many people are getting hurt by these things? Now, this brings us to SB 277, our favorite law here in California. So starting January 1st, 2016, parents or guardians of students in any school or child care facility, whether public or private, will no longer be allowed to submit a personal beliefs exemption to a currently required vaccine. No distinction is made between exemptions based on religious beliefs and other personal beliefs. Students are not required to have vaccinations if they attend a homeschool or independent study program that does not receive classroom-based instruction. So this applies to whether public or private, all California schools and child care facilities, including child care centers, day nurseries, nursery schools, family daycare homes, and development centers. All right, I'm going to talk a little bit about the idea of manufacturing consent. This is Noam Chomsky's idea. So when media news coverage of issues is biased towards the status quo, the following are the results. So the ownership of media is held by major corporations with interests and goals similar to the power elite elements in our society. So that's Big Pharma. People with different views, dissenting voices, are often not heard. The scope of debate is limited. The official position and institutional memory win through and become history. people's interest and attention are diverted away from issues for which they should become concerned. So according to Chomsky, the major media, like the New York Times, Washington Post, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, Associated Press, shapes our perception of the world by serving as agenda setters. Media allow some dissenting voices, but marginalize them using limitations such as concision, which is Chomsky's idea that in regards to mainstream media content, ideas must be stated briefly so they can fill up the content between commercials or fit in the print media's small space devoted to actual news. Therefore, dissenting views are mostly excluded because they take longer to explain and need more complete evidence. To achieve change and overcome the effectiveness of the propaganda model, Chomsky says we need to depend on activism and alternative media. We must cultivate means of intellectual self-defense. We need to develop independent minds. We need to review a wide range of press, including alternative media, and look at the community level. So here's a couple of quotes from Chomsky. As long as some specialized class is in a position of authority, it is going to set policy in the special interest it serves. But the conditions of survival and justice require rational, special planning on the interest of the community of the whole. And by now that means the global community. The question is whether privileged elites should dominate mass communication and should use this power as they tell us they must, namely to impose necessary illusions to manipulate and deceive whom they believe are the stupid majority and remove them from the public arena. The question, in brief, is whether democracy and freedom are values to be preserved or threats to be avoided. In this possibly terminal phase of human existence, democracy and freedom are more than values to be treasured. They may be essential to survival. Okay, I'm going to switch gears here, talk a little bit more about our toxic load of vaccinations has been increasing. So in 1950, there were three childhood vaccines typically given when a child entered school. In 1983, there were 10 recommended vaccines by the age of 6, and that was in 24 doses. In 2010, the CDC vaccine schedule totaled 68 doses, with more than half given by the time the child was only a year and a half old. In 2016, the schedule has increased to 74 doses by the age of 17. 74 doses by the age of 17. These radical increases in the vaccine schedule mean that a 6-month-old baby today would receive over 2.5 times the number of vaccines as the maximum permitted for a 6-year-old back in the 80s. Also, by the time that child was 12 years old, she would have received over 7 times the number of vaccines as a child born 30 years ago. By the time he or she is 18, they would receive 24 times the number of vaccines as an 18-year-old in 1950. 24 times that of 1950. Even more good news, there are currently 271 new vaccines under development just waiting to be finalized and gain approval from the FDA. Pharma, the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, the Pharmaceutical Industries Trade Association, and powerful lobbying group says, the 271 vaccines in development span a wide array of diseases and employ exciting new scientific strategies and technologies. These potential vaccines, all in human clinical trials and under review by the FDA, include 137 for infectious diseases, 99 for cancer, 15 for allergies, and 10 for neurological disorders. That's just great. Okay, even more loss of our rights. Now, there's SB 792, the companion bill to SB 277. This mandates proof of vaccination for measles, pertussis, and optional annual flu vaccine for the first year of employment for daycare providers, early childhood teachers, Head Start teachers, parent co-ops where money is exchanged, YMCA early childhood and after-school program caregivers, in-home daycare providers, and parent volunteers who care for and supervise children. Yeah, and they're also trying to push through mandatory vaccines for all adults next year. Let's talk about some science. You know, I'm not going to overload you with science, but might as well while I'm here. So this is in the Journal of Apoptosis 2012. We conclude that the exposure to a low dose of adjuvanted hepatitis B vaccine leads to loss of mitochondrial integrity, apoptosis induction, and cell death. Okay, Epidemiology 1999. Hep B vaccine increases the incidence of liver problems in U.S. children less than 6 years old by up to 294% versus unvaccinated controls. Hepatogastroenterology, 2002. Hep B vaccine is associated with GI reactions including hepatitis, gastrointestinal disease, and liver function test or abnormalities. Journal of Molecular Biology, 2011. Hepatitis B vaccine alters gene expression. Journal of Toxicology and Environmental Health. Hep B vaccinated boys are 3 times more likely to develop autism. They say that there's no science, but there's no industry-funded science. These are actual non-conflict of interest studies, but nobody talks about those. Hepatitis B vaccine is associated with increased risk of multiple sclerosis, Neurology, 2004. Lupus, in 2009, says vaccination is associated with a rare autoimmune neurological condition, transverse myelitis. Autoimmunity, 2005, Hep B vaccine significantly increases a wide risk of autoimmune diseases. Journal of Clinical Neuromuscular Disease. In the U.S., the highest number of cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome are associated with influenza and Hep B vaccines. Here's a quote from Entropy, 2012. Children with autism diagnosis are especially vulnerable to toxic metals such as aluminum and mercury due to insufficient serum sulfate and glutathione. A strong correlation between autism and the MMR vaccine is also observed, which may be partially explained by an increased sensitivity to acetaminophen administered to control fever. So what do doctors tell you after they get after they vaccinate your kid? Oh, you know, you might have a fever. Just give them some Tylenol. Yeah, great. All right, I'm going to skip over. There's pages and pages of this stuff. I'm running out of time, so I'm going to skip some of the rest of the science, but I'll do a couple more here. All these findings plausibly implicate aluminum adjuvants in pediatric vaccines as causal factors contributing to increased rates of autism spectrum disorders. That's Journal of Toxicology. Yeah, more than that. Okay. So there's studies saying it. Autoimmune processes called lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, macrophagic myofasciitis, Guillain-Barré. The list goes on and on. So what's in this stuff that is so bad? That's causing all this crap. So how about human cell cultures, fetal bovine serum, MSG, human serum albumin, the yellow number 5, aluminum, amino acids, formaldehyde, aluminum, formaldehyde, polysorbate 80, human lung fibroblasts. Okay, all that stuff is toxic and you're injecting it. Monkey kidney cells. All right, so there was one study that finally came out called, which is referred to as the Vaxxed-Unvaxxed study. This was in the Journal of Translational Science this year. Came out with, they studied a bunch of kids in 4 states and compared vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And this is what they found out. There's 30 times more allergies in the vaccinated. 30 times. Over 5 times more learning disabilities. Over 4 times more autism and ADHD. Almost 4 times more neurodevelopmental disorder, 3 times more eczema, 2.5 times more chronic illness. And how does our media react to it? Well, they just normalize it. So Sesame Street now has an autistic 4-year-old character called Julia. So they're, you know, better get used to it, folks. There's going to be a lot of these people around. What you can do is there are lots of books out there that they actually take all the studies and put them into a concise form for you to read. One good one is an e-book called Vaccine Peer Review, The History of the Global Vaccination Program in 1,000 Peer-Reviewed Reports and Studies from 1915 to 2015. This is a free e-book. You can find it online. So in conclusion to the research, I think Dr. Marsha Engel, editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, over 20 years, sums it up nicely where she says, "It is simply no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published or to rely on the judgment of trusted physicians or authoritative medical guidelines. I take no pleasure in this conclusion, which I reached slowly and reluctantly over my 2 decades as an editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. All right, so let's go to the actual medical exemptions here. So what are they asking for? Parent or guardian must submit a written statement from a licensed physician, MD or DO, which states that the physical condition or medical circumstances of the child are such that the required immunizations are not indicated. They need to say which vaccines are exempted, whether the medical exemption is permanent or temporary, and the expiration date if it's temporary. Okay, so this is what I did to get my kids medical exemption. First thing you need to do is get a genetic test. The one I used was 23andme.com. You pay them $1.99 for the Health and Ancestry service. They'll send you a saliva test, spit in it, send it back, wait 3 to 8 weeks for the results, and then you're going to download the raw data from that. You're going to take that raw data and plug it into the detoxification methylation probe. You want to find out the detox methylation profile. Is your child susceptible to vaccine damage? This is called livewello.com, livewello.com. It's $20 for the service. You upload the raw data from 23andMe, go to the variance reports, copy the link to your report, and give it to your doctor along with your username and password so they can look at it. So what does a doctor want to know? I won't go into the exact details here of what genetic markers and things they're looking for, but there are plenty there. My doctor wanted me to have an alternative vaccine schedule of homeoprophylaxis, which is the homeopathy version of vaccines. There's no actual disease agent in this. It's called a NOSODE. It's normal for the mini and okay. So they might have a slight reaction, but most people don't even have a reaction. It's given orally once a month, and it is completely safe. There are studies showing that this actually works. You can go to thehomeopathycenter.org/news/homeoprophylaxis human records studies and trials if you want to learn more. She also wanted me to order the book called The AP Program by Kate Birch from Amazon.com. This is the companion booklet to the homeoprophylaxis program as overseen by Free and Healthy Children International for North America. So yeah, the homeopath, you do a phone consultation with them, they'll send you a waiver, sign it, order the book, they'll send you an invoice, and then order the kit for you once you receive the payments. Okay, so in the consultation with the doctor you're getting the exemption from, they're going to want to know the kid's personal history. So, past medical history, we're talking about prenatal and birth history. There's an increased risk if they're preterm. Past infections and antibiotic use, medications, etc., because there's an increased risk if they're immunocompromised. Important is the family history. So we're talking sibling, parent, grandparent, aunt and uncle. You want 4 generations back. You want a minimum of 4 cases documentation if possible. And what they're looking for, the 4 cases we're talking, history of vaccine reaction, hives, seizures, sudden infant death syndrome in the family. Autoimmunity is a huge one. Rheumatoid arthritis, type 1 diabetes, gout, ulcerative colitis, celiacs, Crohn's, Hashimoto's. Also, talking asthma, allergies, eczema, any cancer in the family, genetic disorders. Okay, perhaps most importantly, the doctor wants to know that you're basing your wish for an exemption on an informed rationale. They want to know that you are educated on the subject and have come to your own conclusion for valid reasons. So what I did was I went online to find my doctor. I went online, found a list of potential doctors that may be open to exemptions, which is pretty easy to find. I got the emails of a bunch of them, and I sent out the following email. The subject says, "My kid is at risk for vaccine damage according to genetic testing." Here's the body of it. "Hello, doctor. I've had genetic testing done at 23andme.com for my 4.5-year-old. I had the results ran through the methylation profile. My son was found to have these these problems. Okay, I'm running out of time, but would you possibly be able to help me with an exemption? I got a reply from one of them. I got a reply from a few of them, but one of them said, come on in. Thank you.
Yes, yeah, so